It has been said above, concerning the Persians, that they do not build temples, but worship the sun and the works fashioned by God, a practice forbidden to us, who are taught not to serve what is made in place of the Maker. Yet to understand that creation will itself be released from its slavery to corruption into the liberty belonging to the glory of God's children, and that creation's eager watching awaits the unveiling of the sons of God, and that the creation was subjected to futility, not of its own will, but because of him who subjected it in hope. And it is surely not necessary that being subjected to the bondage of decay and to futility, and who do these things in a better hope, should be honored in the place due to God, who lacks nothing, or to his Son, the firstborn of all creation. Enough, then, has been said in addition to what precedes, concerning the Persian nation, who avoid altars and images but worship the creation rather than the Creator. Since he also cited a saying of Heraclitus, recounting it as implying that it is foolish to pray to images if one does not know what gods and heroes are, it must be said that it is possible to know God and his only begotten and those honored by God with the title God and who share in his divinity, being distinct from all the gods of the nations, who are demons. Yet it is not possible both to know God and to pray to images. And not only is praying to images foolish, but so is pretending, in accommodation to the multitude, to pray to images, as is done by those who philosophize according to the Peripatetic school, and those who embrace the teachings of Epicurus or Democritus, for nothing spurious ought to exist in the soul of one who is truly reverent toward the divine. We do not honor images also because we do not wish, so far as it lies with us, to fall into the notion that images are other gods. For this reason, we also bring a charge against Celsus, and against all who agree that these are not gods, namely that among those who are reputed wise, there is also this apparent honor paid to images. And the multitude, following this example, err not only by supposing that they worship them merely by way of accommodation, but also by falling in soul into the belief that these are gods, and by not even enduring to hear that the things worshipped by them are not gods. Celsus, then, says that he does not consider them gods, but offerings to the gods, without demonstrating how these are not offerings of men, but, as he termed them, offerings belonging to the gods themselves. It is plain that these are in fact offerings made by men who have strayed in their thinking about the divine. But we do not suppose the images to be likenesses of the divine either, since we do not depict the form of a god, who is invisible and incorporeal. Since according to Celsus we lapse into inconsistency, since we say the divine has no human shape, yet also believe that God made man in his own image and fashioned him in the image of God. It must be said, as has also been said above, that we hold the phrase, according to the image of God, to be preserved in the rational soul, in its quality with respect to virtue. And where Celsus, however, does not see the difference between the image of God and according to the image of God, and claims we assert that God made man as his own image, a form resembling himself. But this too has been addressed above. Next he goes on to say about Christians that they will agree that these things exist in honor of certain beings, whether similar or dissimilar in form, but that the beings to whom these things are consecrated are demons rather than gods, and that one who worships God should not minister to demons. And if indeed he had understood the account concerning demons and what each of them accomplishes, whether summoned by those skilled in such matters or willingly giving himself over to whatever activity he wishes and is able to perform, and had grasped the account concerning demons, which is extensive and difficult for human nature to comprehend, he would not have brought this charge against us, namely that we say one ought not to serve demons if one worships the God over all. And we are so far from serving demons that we even drive them out, by prayers and by the teachings drawn from the sacred writings, from human souls, and from the places in which they have established themselves, and sometimes also from animals. For the demons often work certain effects for the harm even of such creatures. Because of the many things said above about Jesus, there is no need now to repeat them in order to show that they themselves are clearly refuted as worshipping not a god, nor even a demon, but a corpse. Let us then set this aside for the moment and look at the words of Celsus that follow, in which he says, "But first I will ask, why should demons not be served? Is not everything administered according to the plan of God, and does not all providence come from Him? And whatever exists among all things, whether it be the work of God, or of angels, or of other demons, or of heroes, all these have their law from the greatest God, and each has been allotted power over each particular thing, whoever has been deemed worthy of it. Will not then, the one who worships God rightly serve this being who has obtained authority from that source? For it is not possible, he says, for the same person to be a slave to several masters. See here too how much he sweeps together, matters that require no trivial examination, but rather a deeper and more esoteric knowledge concerning the administration of the affairs of the universe. For how it is said that everything is administered according to the plan of God must be examined, and whether this administration extends even to sins or not. For if the administration extends even to sins, not only among men, but also among demons, and among whatever else outside bodies is by nature capable of sinning, let the one who says this see the absurdity of holding that everything happens according to the plan is administered by God. For it follows from this account that even sins, and everything that comes about through wickedness, are administered by God according to His will, which is not the same as saying they happen because God does not prevent them. But if one takes administered in its strict sense, he means that the things administered by wickedness are administered. That is, obviously, everything is administered according to God's will, and no one who sins acts against the administration of God in doing so. The same distinction must be drawn concerning providence, and it must be said that the statement, "all things come from providence," signifies something true when the providence in question is a good providence. But if we shall say without qualification that everything that happens is, according to providence, then even when something evil happens, the statement, "all things come from providence," will be false. Unless one says that even the things that follow as consequences of what comes from God's providence are themselves from God's providence. He also declares that whatever exists in the universe, whether it is the work of God or of angels or of other daimons or of heroes, all these things possess a law derived from the greatest God, and in saying this, he does not declare a true account. For things that transgress the law do not transgress the law that comes from the greatest God by following it. Reason shows that not only wicked human beings transgress the law, but also wicked daimons and wicked angels. And we are far from alone in speaking of wicked daimons. Nearly everyone who holds that daimons exist says the same. Not everything, then, possesses a law derived from the greatest God. For whatever, through its own carelessness, wickedness, or depravity or ignorance of what is good, has fallen away from the divine law, does not possess the law of God, but to give it a new name, and one drawn from Scripture, possesses the law of sin. Now, according to most of those who hold that daimons exist, even the wicked daimons do not possess the law that comes from God, but transgress it. But according to us, all daimons have fallen away from the path toward the good, not having been daimons to begin with. And the class of daimons is a species of those who have fallen away from God. For this reason, whoever worships God ought not to serve daimons. The truth about daimons is also made clear by those who invoke daimons for the sake of the so-called love charms or hate charms, or to hinder actions, or for countless other such purposes. Things done by those who have learned, through incantations and sorceries, to summon and bring on daimons for whatever ends they wish. For this reason, the service of all daimons is foreign to us, who worship the God who is over all things. And the service of what are reckoned to be gods is the service of daimons, for it is written, "The nation's gods, everyone, are but daimons." This is also made clear by the fact that, at the places reckoned most potent among the so-called temples, elaborate incubation rites have arisen, and at the founding of such carved images and shrines, rites of incubation which those devoted to the service of daimons through sorceries have instituted. For this reason we have resolved to flee, as destruction itself, the service of daimons, and we say that the service of daimons is the whole of the worship reckoned among the Greeks as offered at altars, statues, and temples of the gods. There is need and unto that, for it is appointed, and each has received power over some particular thing from the greatest God, whoever has been deemed worthy of any task whatsoever. This requires a very deep knowledge, one able to establish it. Whether then, just as the public executioners in the cities, and those appointed over the grim but necessary business of the state, are so appointed. In the same way, there are wicked demons appointed over certain things by the one who administers the whole by the word of God. Or whether, just as men who go robbing in desolate places set up one particular man to rule over them, so too the demons, forming as it were bands according to the regions of the earth, have made for themselves a certain ruler to lead them in the deeds they have chosen, for the sake of stealing and plundering the souls of men. Now one who intends to speak well on these matters needs, in order that concerning the Christians he may offer his defense, since they turn aside from worshiping anything besides the God over all and his word, the firstborn of all creation, to relate also the saying, "All who came before me are thieves and robbers, and the sheep did not listen to them. And the thief does not come except to steal and to slaughter and to destroy," and whatever else is said to similar effect in the sacred writings. As also, see, authority is granted to you to trample serpents and scorpions underfoot, together with every force the enemy holds, and in no way whatsoever shall anything do you harm. And you will set your foot upon asp and basilisk, and lion and dragon you will crush beneath you. But Celsus knew none of this whatsoever, for if he had known it, he would not have said, "And whatever there may be among all things, whether it be the work of God, or of angels, or of other demons, or of heroes, these have their law from the greatest God, and each has been appointed, having received power, whoever has been deemed worthy of it. Shall not then the one who worships God rightly do service also to this being who has obtained authority from that source?" To these words, he adds that it is not possible for the same person to be enslaved to several masters. A matter we shall take up in the next book, since the seventh volume that we have written against the treatise of Celsus has now attained an adequate compass.